Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it too. I encourage you to listen.
Trip when I try to cross the white wall.
Carson's Corner in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, and I thought that was an interesting way to start the show. You know I love Rage Against the Machine. Every progressive does. You know, listening to Rage Against the Machine is required. If you feel down, if you feel angry, you can always listen to Rage Against the Machine to feel validated. And I got to tell you, I think our government, I think our elected officials really should consider replacing the Star Spangled Banner, or maybe replacing the Pledge of Allegiance with fill in your blank in terms of a Rage Against the Machine song. Wouldn't that be great? You know, I mean, these songs are so important. You know, that was a very, very important song, Without a Face, by Rage Against the Machine. And Zachary De La Rocha is like a god. I mean, the guy, his lyrics, the issues that he speaks about, such anger and such passion and such rage that he's been doing, you know, for decades now. You know, he's been talking about these issues that are coming to fruition for decades. And, you know, he talks about one motive, no hope. We know what that motive is. We know what that motive is here in America. The motive is greed. It's greed. Greed is running everything. It is the profit motive. It is the profit motive, the sequence of money, meaning money moving hands, is more important than the sequence of life. We've discussed on this program that every single life sequence in America, or every single life form is, and on the planet, is in decline. And all you have to do in a society to figure out who's benefiting is look at the ones who are getting rich. Follow the money, as they say, and that tells you a lot about what you need to know about what is happening to our society. It's very, very important. Profits for the bourgeoisie, we know what he's talking about there. You could spend an hour dissecting the lyrics of any Rage Against the Machine song. Just a very, very powerful band. I love those guys. I really do. And, of course, we feature a Rage Against the Machine song at the beginning of this program called Voice of the Voiceless, and that song is about Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's in prison now. Very, very interesting case. It's remarkable. It really is. All right, 347-326-9749 if you want to call in and be a part of the program. My name is Bob Carson, and I got to tell you, I lost my car on Saturday. Those of you who have been following me know that my car has been on the fritz for a long time now, probably close to a year. My transmission was just not working properly. The car was in really, really bad shape. And I went to my residency last month 856 miles to and from Atlanta. And surprisingly, I actually made it there. I didn't think I was going to make it there. I thought I was going to get stuck in one of these states, and I made it there. And then here we are a month later or so, and my car dies. On Saturday, that was it. I pushed it. I took it to work, and on the way back from work, it completely died. I got stuck. I had to push it into a parking lot. And ever since then, I finally got the car towed to my place. But ever since then, I've had to rely on New Jersey Transit. And this is public transportation, as you know. And public transportation is, to a large extent, supported by taxpayer dollars. Okay, this is a subsidized ride to work. You know, you hear about Joe Republican, the individual that votes for Ronald Reagan to get the government off his back. Well, you know, it's funny because this guy, Joe Republican, he gets a subsidized work or ride to work through, you know, mass transit. He visits his mother who's on Medicare and who, you know, maybe retired off of Social Security. He starts a business through a loan from the Small Business Administration. He you know, drives on the socialist roads, drives on, you know, the socialist bridges, and then he votes for Ronald Reagan to get the government off his back. And that's just, it just shows you the hypocrisy out there. But public transportation, it is a political issue, because what's happening now in America, and I'm reading a book now by Ian Haney Lopez called Dog Whistle Politics, and this all fits in. What's happening in America is that we are seeing a cycle of disinvestment right now, where money that is supposed to go to, you know, support public transportation, support public education, support the commons, if you will, is not there now because it has to do with, in some degree, race. It has to do with the fact that the very wealthy do not want their tax dollars to go to subsidizing, you know, poor people to take transportation, to take buses or take trains. That is an absolute fact. Okay, the wealthy, the elites in our society, they look down on people that have to depend on public transportation. They look down on these individuals, and so they don't want their tax dollars to go to support these services. And as we know here in America, we have a system that allows for the interests of the wealthy to be paramount over our interests. You know, elections are what, every 2 to 4 years, but wealthy individuals have to wait maybe 2 or 4 weeks before they could talk to their representative. And a recent study that I posted on Facebook confirms to the extent that the United States of America is an oligarchy. Okay, the United States of America, if you look at the laws that are voted on and passed and the efforts when it comes to repealing laws and regulatory capture and all of these things, well, it almost exclusively is to the benefit of the wealthy, powerful interests in America. If you go up to a poor person, and ask that poor person, what do you want the government to do? And you'll find that almost a very small percentage of the time, the government will actually vote on legislation that is designed to help that poor person. On the other hand, the interests of the very wealthy, they are, you know, often put into law. And as I have often said on this program, the United States of America is like a line. It's like one big line. Those at the front make the most money, and they get served first. And so when you hear, you know, that we're a democracy and your vote counts just as much as the billionaire or the special interest, it's absolute nonsense. When Bill Clinton, in the 90s, when Bill Clinton was on the phone with Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office, and his presidency was in crisis at that point, he took one phone call, and one phone call only, and that was from one of the Von Hul brothers in Florida. They run, you know, this huge sugar company down there, which of course is dependent upon the government. But one of the Von Hool brothers, I think it was Pepe, called Bill Clinton because he was concerned that Al Gore was talking about the environmental regulations and that, you know, the environmental regulations would be threatening to the business interests of the Von Hool brothers. And Bill Clinton, you know, for 18 minutes when he's in the Oval Office, has to take a phone call from this billionaire in Florida. And if that doesn't illustrate, you know, just how corrupt our system is and how we have the best politicians that money could buy, it's all for nothing, then I don't know what does. But, you know, I got to tell you, I enjoy the fact that I become reliant on public transportation because that's where you learn about solidarity. That is where you learn about how to, you know, look out for individuals that are of your class, are of your, you know, surroundings. And, you know, when you're walking and you're walking to the bus stop or you're walking, you know, to your destination and whatnot, and you've got these cars breezing by you, some of these Mercedes and some of these wealthy people, and undoubtedly you know that, you know, these people look down on individuals, as I said earlier, that have to take public transportation. They look at them as inferior and whatnot, as losers, as, you know, people that don't have control over their life. I think it's empowering. I really do. I think it's empowering, you know, not owning a car and getting around. And it's almost like thumbing your nose at the system. And I'll tell you another thing, too, is that individuals that take public transportation and that do not have vehicles, obviously, you know, as I mentioned, they're in a similar socioeconomic class to myself. But you know what? There is solidarity among us downtrodden. There is the idea that we need to stick together and we need to, you know, continue to fight this oppression, because most of these people that don't have cars are in one shape or form economically oppressed. There's just no question about that. And it's really a good lesson in solidarity, having to rely on the public transportation system. And it just makes me even more and more angry. It makes me even more and more committed to rebelling against this system. Because I got to tell you, the elites in our society, they would be just absolutely disgusted if they had to see what I see on a daily basis. They would be just repulsed because these people are just, you know, committed to their environment. They don't know what it's like to, you know, actually have to walk to work and not rely on their, you know, their expensive car. They don't know what it's like to actually have to commingle with individuals that, you know, maybe aren't of the same economic class as they are. They have no idea. And so it's just really, really important stuff. And, you know, it's in a way, it's good in a way. And plus, you know, me being on public transportation now, I'll save a hell of a lot of money when it comes to gas. Okay, that's what's killing me. And you know, it just shows you just how screwed the American worker is. When George W. Bush came into office, the price of a gallon of gas was 99 cents. If you can believe that, in 2000, it was something like 99 cents, okay? And what has happened over the past, you know, 10, 15 years is the price of a gallon of gas has doubled, has tripled. And that's been relative to your wages. Of course, wages in America have not doubled or tripled. You know, you and I have experienced no income growth over the past 30 plus years, and we're not getting any income growth. You know, we're going to get we're going to see maximum wages passed in America. We're going to see ban like we saw in Oklahoma last week, a ban on any raise of the minimum wage. That's what's coming. That's what's happening here as we move closer towards a complete corporate state. Now the average price of a gallon of gas is well over $3. Okay, that's eating into your paycheck. And the reason why it's well over $3 is because of the amount of speculation that goes into the price of a gallon of gas, so much so that not too long ago, Rex Tillerson of ExxonMobil testified that, yeah, you know, 50 to 60 cents of every gallon of gas is directly attributable to speculation. And that's only going to get worse. It really is. As we continue to drill everywhere, we continue to just become ever so more reliant on this gas. And now you have 800, 900 million cars on the planet that are run by gas. You have 7 or 8 pounds, I believe, in every tire that's gas. I mean, it's oil or oil. It's just everywhere. It's everywhere you go. We're getting further and further and further addicted to an inefficient energy source, and that is a testament to money. I mean, that's what this is here. That is an absolute testament to the power big oil in not only this country, everywhere around the world. And so, you know, if I can avoid that, if I can avoid having to get a car and to pay these astronomical gas prices that are just siphoning me, then it's a moral victory for me. All right, I want to talk about this Cliven Bundy situation because this is another important story here, not because of you know, his disagreement with government. You know, we all know that the corporate media, the elites in our society, love to use government only for themselves and nobody else. Okay, it's only welfare if it's going to a poor person or a minority person. If it's going to the corporations, like the built-in corporate welfare system that we have, then, you know, that's just that's fine. That's American exceptionalism, or that's you know, entrepreneurship. That's, you know, it's not welfare. No, it's only welfare if it's going to, you know, the non-productive members of society, right? And so that's that. You know, what's important here. What is important here is that this illustrates a number of different things. Number one, it illustrates to the extent that these right-wing terrorists, these right-wing extremists, which I've been talking about on this program for 6 years now, okay, ever since the 2009 Department of Homeland Security report came out, but you can even look before that in 2008 to see just the deterioration of the right wing, resulting in an explosion of violence in America. And John Amato and David Nywert wrote a book about this called Over the Cliff, how, you know, with the election of President Obama, even beforehand, you had hate crimes across America. You had, white, frustrated white kids going out and burning, you know, black churches and defacing property and whatnot. And I just watched a documentary last night about the Shenandoah murder, where an illegal immigrant, Luis Ramirez, was murdered by a bunch of, white kids, racist kids, from a small town in Ohio. And the local authorities covered the crime up. The individuals responsible for the death of this immigrant, they were ultimately let go by the racist jurors. I mean, just so much so that the Department of Justice had to step in and actually had to try these individuals and try these police officers. But this is just, you know, a racially motivated attack. It's just one racially motivated attack that has been occurring since 2008. And what you have any time a Democrat is in the White House, or you know, anyone other than a right-wing corporatist, or at least identified as such, you have an explosion of these right-wing sovereign citizen patriot groups. These are essentially fascist groups that are highly militarized, highly paranoid, and very, very dangerous, extremely dangerous individuals. You know, they the Timothy McVeigh types, they're out there. They're consolidating, and they're really making for a very dangerous political environment. And these individuals who, you know, swore a loyalty oath against the government, who subscribed to paranoid government conspiracy theories, they are, in an indirect way, the handmaidens of corporate America. They are essentially legitimized by our corporate media that wants government to be deregulated you know, not helping of those individuals that are not, you know, of the same class, or you know, that are not part of the business community. And so you have these individuals, these militia types at this site with guns, with rifles, similar to what we've seen at Tea Party rallies, where these Tea Party individuals are allowed to bring guns. Okay, they were egged on in 2009 to 2010 by a Republican congressman. They were reinforced. Their ideas and their extremism was constantly reinforced by our corporate media. And this gets entered into the arena of debate here, when in actuality, you know, they should be marginalized. When in actuality, the corporate media should be, you know, educating the American public about the threat that these groups pose and their relationship to the right wing and Fox News, for example. You know, Fox News covering these individuals, and this is nothing new. You know, you could go back to 2009 with Glenn Beck and a guy named Joe Horn. I don't know if you remember Joe Horn, but Joe Horn was this right-wing guy out of Texas who killed two illegal immigrants breaking into a home after the 911 operator told him not to. Now, this is a guy who killed two people. He shot them dead in the street, okay? And the right wing, they genuflect to this guy. They absolutely love this guy. Glenn Beck brought him on his show. Other hosts celebrated what he did, and we all know why. And this type of vigilantism gets mainstreamed by Fox News. And then you can look back to the George Zimmerman, what he did. George Zimmerman and his actions were he's a hero to these individuals, and he's a hero to many in the corporate media, and that's what we have now with you know, these people, these militia types, these sovereign citizens, these real, you know, nut jobs. They're heroes, and their behavior is reinforced. Now let me ask you a question, folks. We know that the corporate media dismantled the Occupy protests. We know that you know, their message and what they stand for is not going to be entered into the arena debate. The American public is not going to be allowed to consider the merits of the Occupy movement. You can find out about the Occupy movement. You can potentially join the Occupy movement if it still exists, but that's going to be outside of the corporate media. You know, the Tea Party, you know, we know that anytime there's a Tea Party rally, there's wall-to-wall mainstream coverage. There's, you know, news reporters all over the place and whatnot. And you've got Fox News who routinely promotes the Tea Party events, and you know, even encouraged individuals, even held Tea Party rallies, Fox News, you know, for obvious reasons and whatnot. But what would happen if instead of these, you know, these right-wing corporate fascist Tea Party people who are the handmaids of corporate America, what would happen if this were, you know, a bunch of Occupy protesters with guns? Or what would happen if this were, you know, maybe some, you know, militant African-American protesters? How would they be treated by the corporate media? How would it be different? I think the answer is pretty obvious, okay? And I think that this, again, it illustrates a certain level of hypocrisy on the corporate media, that this garbage, these people, this form of terrorism, domestic terrorism, if you're in the United States, you have a greater chance of being attacked by one of these right-wing extremists, especially if you're a public official. You look at the polls, you know, a third of these people believe that attacks against the government are justifiable. I guarantee you that number has probably gone up since 2010. You've got instances of right-wing violence all across America. You've got individuals, nativists out there. You should have seen this documentary I saw last night. It was disgusting. These individuals in Shenandoah, I believe, I hope I'm pronouncing the name of the town correctly. The individuals that attended a rally were cheering the death of this immigrant. The things that they were saying about Mexicans and about this individual were just absolutely disgusting. But these individuals are Tea Party members. They are your Fox News crowd. What they were saying, the racism that they were displaying, the sickening comments, the gloating of the death of a immigrant, a Mexican immigrant who came to this country for, you know, we can, that's a whole other discussion. It's not unlike what you hear at you know, a Republican household. It's not unlike you would hear, you know, on the Fox News, you know, chat room or whatever. It illustrates just what a sorry state of affairs that we're in right now, and how, you know, everything in America has been racialized. Everything is put into these dog whistle terms designed to get people to, you know, vote against their best interests and whatnot. And this is where we're at right now. And these individuals, the folks like Clive and Bundy and everything, I mean, so hypocritical in the sense that this man has made millions of dollars because of the United States government, because of protections. And other ranchers who, you know, have cattle that are grazing on public land, they're paying taxes. And they're doing the right thing. And this guy is just going to decide, you know, what he's going to pay and what law is valid and what law, you know, isn't valid. And we're just going to grant him that authority. And then we're going to have a corporate media validate this extremism and therefore, you know, perpetuate it. And, you know, this is where we're at in America. It's really a sad state of affairs, but I'm going to tell you, nothing would be tolerated from anything other than, you know, a pro-corporate, anti-government viewpoint. If this were a bunch of communists out there, you know, protesting, forget about it. You know, they would be arrested in 2 seconds. The corporate media would be just pounding such efforts, and it wouldn't even make it, you know, it would just be filtered out by the corporate media. And so that's what really bothers me about this situation, is that, you know, excuse me, this is what we have in this country. This is where we're at, folks. It really is. Now, what do we got else going on here? I get so depressed and I get so disappointed. The state of affairs that I can't even, aside from reading books and listening to certain podcasts, you know, independent podcasts like the podcasts you would hear on the Commons Project Network, I don't even really pay attention to, you know, the surface issues, these, you know, gossip issues that are just reflective of a corrupt system. You know, Mark E. Smith, the author of Voting in America, Consent to Tyranny, I'm sorry, Voting in America, I'm stuffed up. He talked about how breathing in a toxic environment is not healthy for you. And so if you're in a toxic environment, then you don't want to breathe. Well, that's what we're in right now in America. You know, we have a toxic corporate environment where the corporations and special interests control everything. Our tax code is one giant junket for corporate America, highly regressive, designed to punish wage earners of America. Our system of labor control, as we've spoken about on this show for quite some time, is only further shackling American workers. American workers are fighting with their hands tied behind their back. And as a result of that, we are bearing the price. We are living in poverty right now, in squalor, because as Chris Hedges says, human beings have no intrinsic value to corporations. We have corporations just trying to gobble up as much profit as they can, in spite of the effects on society. We have no manufacturing sector. We are moving towards fascism. And, you know, it's not going to come, a solution is not going to come in the form of a political candidate. You're not going to be able to vote for a political candidate and get change. You have to tear down the entire system. That's the realization I'm coming to. Because, you know, if you have, let's say that us progressives out there, we can nominate someone right now. We could put someone from the, you know, Socialist Workers Party or somebody who we felt was pure and would take on the corporate interests in America. Let's say we could automatically elect him to the presidency, and we could have him in there. But what would happen? What would happen if you had someone like Bob Carson in the White House, or someone like Brad Hallhut, or fill in the blank? Well, what happened is, you know, once they started to voice their desires and their plans, they would get a visit from someone from the Federal Reserve, one of the bankers, one of the many private banks, and the Open Meeting Committee, that's what it's called. They would get a visit from, you know, this lobbying group or that lobbying group, and they would not be able to work because the system is designed to preserve itself. It's designed to preserve the status quo, and therefore any solution within the system is doomed to failure, is doomed for failure because of the very system, because of the way it is adopted and it is maintained. It is adversarial to our interests, okay? And that's why, you know, I'm starting to go against the idea of reform. You know, you could go back to the New Deal program. You could go back to after World War II and look at the massive state involvement in the economy and the decent results that produced. And, you know, Stuart Acuff and Richard Levins wrote a book about this, how many economists consider the decades after World War II to be the birth of the middle class. because during those decades you had sustained job growth. Okay, you had each decade ended with 20% more jobs, a higher growth rate in a capitalist society. The growth rate, you know, it's expected to be anywhere from 3 to 5%. Okay, zero growth would be considered a crisis, and you had a much more stable society in those decades when there was, you know, seemingly a truce between capital and labor, although, you know, there really wasn't much of a truce with the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act. But you understand, I mean, even if we went back to those times, it still wouldn't make a difference, because the special interests, the fascist forces of America, would get their fingers in the till and rearrange the progress and ultimately eliminate the New Deal and the great government programs that make this country great. And that's what's happening slowly but surely. I mean, that's the idea. That's what these fascists want, is, you know, they look at the institutions, the countervailing institutions. They look at successful government programs that are ultimately appreciated by the vast majority of Americans, and they realize that they are a threat. That if we could abolish these programs and take us back to, you know, the robber baron days, take us back, move us, you know, in a backwards direction, which they're doing every single day, then that'll be better for them. They'll have more social control. They'll have more wealth, more political power. And they would force us to basically suffer even worse than, you know, what's going on now. And I almost think that is the best course. That is the best course for us, because, you know, once that happens, then maybe we could organize around the organized money, and we could truly reform, truly abolish the system and replace it with something to our liking. We could truly punish the fascist forces out there that are controlling our everyday lives. And so, you know, that's what I see happening. I see us, you know, completely moving backwards. And I mean, I don't know how anybody really can deny this at this point. I don't know how you can deny that this is happening right in front of your eyes right now. But, I mean, let's go over the facts here. Let's go over what has happened here. Instead of investing, our government has cut. You know, President Obama created the austerity model, and now the federal budget deficit has been cut roughly a third. And as a result of that, no investments, no government programs, okay? The government is just there to serve the interests of the business community. And the idea of extending unemployment benefits, you know, investing in job programs as the government has done in the past, it doesn't exist. It's not an investment unless it goes to the corporate sector. And so you've got us cutting spending at a time where the unemployment rate is very, very high in many states. It still is historically high. You've got us moving in the direction of complete, unfettered free trade. This is in spite of the American people. This is a going against the will of the American people, as was the case during the first round of free trade deals. You've got the abolishment of organized labor, the abolishment of voting rights, the Civil Rights Act, affirmative action. You've got, in many states in America, financial managers, corporate-owned financial managers that are circumventing local democracy and enacting austerity and corporate giveaways at the behest of the citizens. And in the case of Michigan, where, you know, last year the citizens voted against this and they voted to repeal these financial managers, well, it didn't matter because the governor reinstituted it. And now Detroit is suffering. And you know, we can have an entire show on Detroit, but you see what's happening. In Oklahoma, they just passed a law banning the raising of the minimum wage. In, you know, this Supreme Court session, or maybe the next one, we will see the abolishment of organized labor in the public sector. We will continue to see regulations and regulatory agencies be nullified. There was, one school of thought with regards to corporate personhood and the corporate civil rights movement that we had in America that says that now that corporations are people and that, with the Hobby Lobby case, I don't think that's been decided yet, but we all know how it's going to be decided, where corporations are going to be, further considered people, and it's going to be further entrenched in the law. Well, this is going to be used to absolve corporations of regulatory control. Corporations now are people, and so regulatory agencies have the right to regulate these corporations? So, boom, more corporate control, more volatility in our economy. A complete corporate fucking state this country is becoming. I mean, just every direction. Just look at what's happening right now, okay? We're going to have maximum wage laws in America. We're going to have the complete privatization of this country, of everything. Everything. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to privatize the air we breathe. You don't pay a fee to a corporation, you don't get in the air and you die. I mean, does that sound extreme? Are you telling me that that's not how sick our system is to allow this? You telling me I'm exaggerating here? These corporations wouldn't privatize the air? They privatize the water, and the earth is three-fourths water. They privatize our health care, which means that they essentially privatized our body. They privatized our health. Our health is a commodity now to be traded. You know, I mean, this is a sick society that we live in, and it's only getting worse. And it is made possible by, the Clive and Bundys, these sick, fascist, racist people that watch Fox News and listen to talk radio. That's what maintains the class divide. You know, any Tea Party person out there is just the same as anybody that rides public transportation. All right? They're one and the same. I talked about how I have to rely on public transportation, how I'm poor. I'm one of the many downtrodden. Well, so are these Tea Party people in many cases. So are the people of the South, where most of the poverty exists in America. And you look at southern states, and for every dollar they pay in taxes, they get $2 or $3 back from the federal government. They're just like us, okay? We all have the same economic interests. We all make our money through a wage or a paycheck. Okay? Our interests are the same. But yet, we are divided among race. We are divided among class. We are divided among religion. We are divided among sexuality. By those who benefit the most from our society. By those who are laughing all the way to the bank. And as I said earlier, follow the money. That's all you have to do is follow the money to realize who's making out, who's laughing, who's capitalizing on your misery. I'm reading this book now by Ian Haney Lopez, Dog Whistle Politics, and you know, he talks about the Koch brothers and everything, and how the Koch brothers have made their private agenda a mass movement now. And it's not just the Koch brothers. I mean, it's the libertarian interests that have taken control that really are at the heart of our economic policies in America. And it's really frightening, but this is what they want, and this is what they're moving us towards. Elections don't matter. Elections have really almost no bearing on your life anymore. What you need to do is start to become active, and we need to really reject the system, number one, reject participating in the system, okay, and start mobilizing. And there's no easy answer. There's no easy solution to this. But we know that this is not working. It's never going to work and whatnot. It's a terrible time to be an American. All right. What else do we have going here? Oh, yeah. I was so pissed off about this that I really just had to mention this. Of course, we talk about the corporate media, and we've often talked about the Sunday shows, how, the Sunday shows are filled with multimillionaires, individuals that have no connection to you and I. I hate these people. I genuinely hate these individuals with all my heart. I do. I don't care. I'm telling you the truth. I these people are disgusting. They make me sick. They are, laughing. They're riding our backs. They're rich because we're poor, and vice versa. We're poor because they're rich. And they're the news shapers. They are the news shapers, and they tell the American public what is going to be discussed and what is not going to be discussed. And, unfortunately, because of the way our media is structured, millions of people, watch this stuff. And that's how their ideas are formed, by watching a show like this and the viewpoints expressed. And what we've seen on these Sunday shows, and it's the same thing with the landscape of the media, is that the right-wing pro-business point of view is constantly reinforced. It's constantly reinforced by the guests that appear on these shows. Studies show that they're almost overwhelmingly white men of a right-wing viewpoint. It's reinforced by what is and what isn't discussed. Okay, this goes back to Noam Chomsky's propaganda model. Well, where journalists and pundits are not free. They're not free because of ownership. They're not free because of advertising. They're not free because of flack. All these different propaganda filters that really lead to an arena in which the media serves elite interests. The media represents elite interests, and they serve elite interests. It's no surprise that the state of corporate media is where it is right now, highly consolidated and highly manipulative, designed to manufacture consent, as I absolutely agree with Noam Chomsky's thesis. But now they hired a confirmed racist to be one of their contributors, and it's just such a sad moment. But it illustrates the mainstreaming of hate, illustrates how dysfunctional our discourse has become, and it goes back to what I was saying before, where people like Cliven Bundy, extremism, racism, is supported by corporate media. It's supported, it's sold to the American people. And when these corporations do this, when they validate this craziness and validate these racists, they're saying, in effect, that we don't care about minorities. We don't care about those that are on the outside of the spectrum in terms of class, in terms of sexuality, in terms of race. They don't care because they realize that there's some sort of financial payoff for this. It's like the Duck Dynasty controversy. You know, the corporations that essentially endorsed that guy's viewpoints, they didn't move to fire him. They didn't move to do any type of disciplinary action. So they endorsed his racist viewpoints. They endorsed his behavior because there's a financial calculation to be made. And they don't care about what's right and wrong. I mean, human morality doesn't enter into the equation when it comes to corporations. They don't care. It's all about the bottom line. And so now we have, confirmed racists that are contributors. They're mainstream pundits now. It's just sick. It really is. All right, we're just about out of time here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. I want to encourage you to go to the commonsprojectnetwork.com for great independent progressive media out there. You could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to like the Carson's Corner Facebook page at facebook.com/Carson's Corner 13. We're going to leave you with this Rage Against the Machine song, and that's going to be it. Hope you enjoyed the show. Be back at you next week here, okay? Oh, Jesus Christ. I haven't coughed all day until I'm on the show now. This is where my throat gets dry, and this is where I start to cough every 2 seconds, which is horrible for radio. So this is Rage Against the Machine. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.
Got no car, so I got no soul. Life in prison, no parole, no control. Food, I got my number on a wiretap. Cause I jacked for civil act. Fuck a Cadillac, survive. One motive, no broken difference. Sidewalk and walk, it's like a tightrope. Yes, I know my deadline, sire. Try to look back to my past.